everybody. It's time for another episode of Benchwarmers. This one is very special, though. Give me a second here. We're joined by Nash Jensen. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Welcome. Welcome. Thanks, buddy. Nash Jensen. I'm Quinn's not here to yell at me, so I'm having fun with the soundboard. Just a solo pod. I mean, one half of the Benchwarmers, I guess. As I mentioned, the guy joining me that you're going to hear very soon as we get into this conversation was the opposite of a Benchwarmer. Even more than the other guys we had on. You obviously played more than Cordell and Cody even. So those guys stink.
Yeah, they suck.
Yeah. Here, let's see. Talking to the mic again.
Hello?
There we go. Nice and loud for Nashy Bear.
Sir?
Yeah, talking to the mic. We're fat. We're breathing into the mic. You're going to get used to it. If you have listened to this pod, you're used to a couple fatsoes breathing into a mic already. Mm-hmm. So this is already chaotic, but this is what happens when I get free reign to run a pod.
When you get full control, there's no real straight line. It's very up and down.
Yeah, there's no checks and balances in the podcast world, and that's why we are where we are right now. Just going to run through. We're going to do like some normal pod stuff. I'm out of breath from standing up multiple times. But talk some current events and then kind of get to know you a little better, which is going to be weird. I'm going to be asking questions I know the answer to, but that's the point of an interview. And then we're going to do probably the most contentious topic you could get into with movies, because this group of people is so loud and so like dead set in their opinions, and we're going to break down superhero movies, start them, sit them. I'm talking nerds.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Yeah.
Our relationship might change depending on your start them, sit them.
I mean, if that's what breaks it down, then I guess it is what it is. But I would consider myself a casual in the superhero movie world. I know what's going on because Marvel has gotten so huge, mm-hmm. and you can't not hear about it.
Right.
Like right now I hear how horrible this new Ant-Man movie is. Yes. And like it's we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
All right. Current events. We were talking about it earlier, but that boy Ja Morant. I would imagine most people listening are probably Minnesota sports fans for the most part, so Timberwolves fans. Mm-hmm. Timberwolves fans are not fans of Ja.
No.
Especially after the playoffs last year. But I don't know. It kind of feels like I hope it's not too late for him to change his situation. I think it's just who he's surrounding himself with and, you know, kind of what he's had. It seems like he's having an identity crisis because I think everywhere in the world today, people want to pretend and cosplay like they've struggled through life. Some people just can't accept that life has been easy for them.
Right.
Because I think you get shamed for that if life was easy for you. And I don't know the specific of Ja's upbringing or like where he's from. I know he went to a private school and that he gets made fun of for that on NBA Twitter, but it just kind of feels like he's pretending to be something he's not when he could fumble the biggest bag of a lifetime.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of just like, you can have the mindset of, like, you know, I came out of the mud. And like,
yeah.
I kind of had the same thing. Like, it was just kind of a mindset for me. But, I knew I had a really easy upbringing, had a great upbringing. But, like, I think he's taking it to a whole different level.
Yeah, it's like he takes it personally that, like, he grew up with both parents and, like, went to a nice school.
Exactly. Like, just live the life that you've been living. Like,
and the people who are actually out of the mud don't care about that stuff.
Exactly.
Like Dame is like actually from the mud. Like exactly. He made it out and he came out and he said, why would I care about what anybody's upbringing is from? Like that doesn't change who they are. It just, I mean, Ja's barely older than us, mm-hmm. if he is at all. And it's just like, you hope it gets changed before it gets too bad. Because obviously not involved too much in like the inner workings of how like Memphis operates, But I've seen NBA Twitter and like people talk about it from Memphis, and when they see someone popular flashing a gun, that's not a warning, that's a dare for somebody to run up on you. And I don't know, it's just scary. You hope he figures it out, because I mean, he's one of the best players in the league. That's it's beside the point, but like just to see kind of this destruction going on right in front of our eyes is pretty crazy.
Yeah, and like I've seen it before, like in my past teammates. Like I've had some basketball teammates even who had $1 million body, $1 million skills, and they could go do anything they want at the next level, but the mind is just not there.
It's like dudes will throw it away to pretend to be something they're not.
Exactly.
And I think, I mean, I didn't come from a lot either, but it's just like you let that be your identity when you do come from nothing too much, that you're afraid of disrupting that. And if you make money, then people back home don't look at you the same way, and you have people calling for money, and you know, it, you go back to wherever you're from and you hear you've changed, like all this stuff. And I don't know, he's young, a lot of money, impressionable, but he also has to understand that it's time to change and give up on that.
Yeah, and you kind of talked about it when we first started talking about it, is the people that he's hanging around with.
Yeah.
Giving up those people who you've like really built a relationship with, and like you both kind of act the same, like even with us, like
yeah,
that's one of, giving those things up is like one of the hardest things that you can do.
Yeah.
So I think that if he can get over that part where like you can be different from the people who are in your friend group, I think it'll be a absolutely. Lot better for him.
Yeah, and I think I don't know. This is already more serious than I would have liked it to be, but you kind of, as you grow up through life, you surround yourself with the people that truly need to be there. And if they can't accept that, hey, I don't need to be like part of this, then you probably don't need them in your friend group.
Right.
Jaws poised to make $300 million either between a shoe deal and NBA money. And it's just like, I understand like being a young athlete, and Paul Pierce brought it up. He's like, I got stabbed, I carried a gun with me everywhere. You never saw a video of Paul Pierce flashing it on his Instagram story and like brandishing it. And I don't think Paul Pierce tried to pretend to be somebody he wasn't until Kevin Garnett got after him.
Yeah.
That whole last year. You thought you was Kobe?
Right.
You thought they loved you? Oh, one of the like
tough.
The most disrespectful things I've ever heard in sports.
I felt bad for him, but it was very funny to see that video.
KG's been on people's asses his whole career too. Like he made fun of Kevin Garnett's mom, or Tim Duncan's mom,
mm-hmm.
who died of cancer.
Yeah.
And it's like, is nothing off limits for him?
Exactly.
That's crazy. But I don't know. It's just an unfortunate situation. He's facing a potential 50-game suspension.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think he's taking the right steps in deleting his social media and getting off of that. Not here, but like even the old, this is three gun related incidents with him now in the last 3 months, where it was somebody in his group, the Pacers team said they saw green beams coming into the team bus. Mm-hmm. And then, he got in the altercation with a 17-year-old, which apparently ended with him brandishing a gun. And it's like, dude, you don't have to anymore.
Exactly.
Like, it's okay to pay for security detail. Mm-hmm. If you want to go out and go to the club and whatever, one, you play with Steven Adams. Just bring him with. And
exactly.
Then he is a superhero. He'll shield you from everything. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it really is kind of sad to see, but it kind of seems like, I've always thought in life, like, you see somebody hit rock bottom and they have two choices. You either fix it and work your way up, which isn't easy, or the easy way out is just to keep digging, and you see where he goes. But I think Ja kind of hit that point, and we're going to see hopefully improvement for him, because he's an incredible basketball player to watch. So it's just, I don't know, we've seen it on smaller scales, and it's like that lifestyle just kind of sucks you in. Like, I didn't grow up around guns or, you know, gangs and stuff, but I grew up around people you'd consider like white trash, and never went to college, no family members have ever gone to college, nobody has any money.
Mm-hmm.
And you never see people escape that because they think that's what they're limited to, which is a sad realization when you live that out, but you can't escape it.
Yeah.
You have to have a lot of bounces break your way, and I'd be ignorant to say otherwise, but I mean, you can, you know, make the most out of your potential in life. And that's the philosophy corner for the first 10 minutes of the Benchwarmers. The other, I've actually been paying attention to the NBA a little more now that it's just combine season and pre-draft stuff. Football's done. The NBA MVP has had a lot of discussion around it, and Kendrick Perkins has kind of been leading the pack, and him and J.J. Redick are going back and forth. Yeah. That there's like a racial bias by NBA voters to like if a European player or a white player has lesser stats, they're seen as more valuable to a team as a guy who has, you know, a black player who has better stats. The most famous example is Steve Nash winning when Kobe was averaging like 32 or whatever it was. I think we just need to change the narrative of what the MVP award is. Is it the most valuable to your team? Because if it is, I think it's Jokic. I don't think there's any argument about what he's doing. And the Nuggets have pieces around, but he's making them, you know, potential title contenders. Or is it the best player award? Because then we can have that discussion. If you just say best player award or most valuable player, they kind of conflate the two, and I think that's where some confusion comes from.
Yeah, I've always thought that the MVP should be the best player in the league.
Yeah.
Like, whether they're making their teammates around them better or not.
And then just call it the best player award.
Right.
Or, you know, name it after whoever.
But if they're really trying to bring in, like the whole value that they have to the team, then I think it's definitely Jokic. I mean,
because who else are they arguing?
Joel.
Embiid. I say this after saying I've been paying attention to basketball, but
I don't remember the last time I watched a full NBA game other than like on road trips during the season. Yeah. That's like the only thing on TV in the hotel room.
By the way, speaking of that, I'm like getting Snapchat memories of the spring season around this time, and I'm just like, those were times I tried to black out of my brain.
Yeah.
And I think I did. I don't remember. That season didn't happen. I know Dom Izzo tweeted out the highlight from the SIU game in the spring, and I'm that game didn't happen.
No. It never happened. Never heard of that.
Staying in basketball, the boys, we are talking Wednesday, 8 p.m. tonight, Summit League Tournament Championship. We beat the Bunnies yesterday in the semifinals, and it's always great to end their season and at see least, their tears on the timeline.
At least somebody at any issue can beat the Bunnies.
Jeez. All right. You guys never lost a national title at CSU when I was on the team. I'll just say that.
That's true. We needed you.
Moral support, glue guy, bench warmer.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just, it always, they're so entitled, and they feel like they should win everything. Which is kind of it's a mark of a good program. Like, that's the expectation, and you think you should win all the time. But when you're, like, trying to complain about the refs and all this stuff, and how, when you just can't believe that you just straight up got beat, then I don't know what to tell you. Like, you're just an annoying fan base.
Exactly.
When we lost SDSU in Frisco, I was just like, we could have rolled out an all-time NDSU team, and we weren't winning that day. Yeah. It just wasn't in the cards.
No, it was. I don't want to get too deep into that. Yeah. That wasn't a fun day for me, obviously, being my last game. But, yeah, I mean, I have a huge amount of respect for their football program and how far they've come. Like, I feel like, obviously, we can always say, like, oh, they always have a big head, or they just feel like they should be handed things.
Yeah.
That team this year,
dude,
was disgusting.
And I think they're going to go on a run for a little bit.
I think they are too.
Yeah.
Even with Stig leaving, because Jimmy Rogers, he's been there forever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the changing of the guard will be interesting to see. It'll certainly be a talking point going into this fall, but like, Gronowski's back. They lose Kraft, and
their entire offensive line is back.
Lose a couple D linemen that were all conference players, but it's like, dude, they're still stacked.
Chonky brothers are back.
Yeah, and the exciting part about it is NDSU had the worst injury luck they could have had last year. So, I mean, if we avoid that bug going into next year, all those guys have, those young guys have the experience. Hopefully we're back to full strength. You're going to see a full season of Cole Wisniewski. hopefully. You get to see the offense develop around Cam and Cole Payton and how these things shake out. It's going to be pretty exciting to see the Bison. But like I said, I don't know if like you roll Georgia out on that field in Frisco. It just seemed like SCSU was going to roll.
I know. I hate even talking about what my mindset was going into that game, but I knew in my mind, and you guys kind of talked about it on the pod, like if we were going to have any chance to win that game, like we had to make it a close game.
Yeah.
But if we let them get up by a couple touchdowns, like it was going to be SDSU all day.
And with the injuries and everything and just how our defense was playing, it had to be a knockdown dragout.
Yeah.
We had to have 40 minutes TOP. Otherwise, it just – you saw what happened.
Yeah.
But
– oh, I lived it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I just – it's certainly – in the grand scheme of things, it sucks that it was SDSU, mm-hmm. but like still a hell of a season, everything you guys overcame. And there's stuff that isn't even public about what you guys overcame and what you went through in the locker room. So that's why I'll always have the locker rooms back, even when I'm not involved. Obviously, I'm, God, going on 3 years out of it already.
Yeah.
That's nuts. But no, it's just it's great to see a little bit of revenge. It would have stung if SDSU won last night.
Yeah.
But not only did we beat them, we beat the piss out of them. Mm-hmm. And I think it ended up being like a 10-point game. It was not that close.
Yeah. At one point, weren't they up by a dub?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure?
Yeah. And I don't know. It's just like it felt so good to see it and then see all the tears.
Yeah.
That always come down. But interesting little twist. Game is in Sioux Falls. And that prompted Paul Mills, the coach of Oral Roberts, to complain about that fact that there's home cooking and you're closer to the Dakota schools, obviously, USD and SDSU. Paul Mills is a supervillain.
Yeah.
Everybody hates him. Mm-hmm. But he's also Dave Richmond's child, firstborn. Dave Richmond is daddy to Paul Mills. They got in that big fight last year in Fargo. And it's going to be interesting to see what goes on this evening, but they have another NBA guy on their team. Last name's Asmus, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Stud player.
I feel like we've heard about him for years.
Yeah, and like they said, I saw a tweet today that I mean, between him and Grant, there's going to be all 30 teams represented mm-hmm. for scouts. It's just been super cool to see Grant's rise because we heard about him when I was playing. Anyway, it's like. Okay, 6'9", 6'10", can shoot, can move. Cool. And now you're seeing he had a 20-20 last night. And guy's an absolute dog.
Yeah, like I have like no words of how good that kid is at basketball. Like,
yeah.
I've never talked to him other than I know one time I had an interaction with him, like a little kid at something asked how tall he was. I'm like, hey, Grant, how tall are you? He's like 6'11". Like,
sure.
Oh, my goodness. Like, just to see somebody that tall and just to be able to – it looks like he's a guard out there.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you're seeing it a lot more in the league, but, like, just to see it and be around it.
These unicorns are becoming less mm-hmm. and less rare, and that's the crazy part.
Yeah.
The big one, obviously, is Victor Wembanyama, mm-hmm. the French player, 7'4". And when he was 15, videos of him dogging Rudy Gobert in one-on-one, and it's just like, how is that even a real person? Like, how is... I think that's why I give the most credit for basketball players being the most athletic athletes. 6'10", and you're controlling your body like that.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I don't think people understand how freaky basketball players are. But I think Grant has a legit shot at the NBA. I think he has the things you can't teach, like we always mm-hmm. talk about in pre-combine stuff. 6'11", with handles that can shoot and smart with the basketball. Hard nose, like he's from Devil's Lake. He's not like this flashy player, but he just puts his nose down and dogs people. And dude has like 150 Twitter followers, and like he just doesn't care about any of it. He loves playing ball.
Yeah, no, it's very good to see. Like, with what was it, like a month or a few weeks ago, where he really started blowing up on Twitter.
Yeah,
with a couple of times
he hit NBA Twitter.
Yeah, and you do see a lot of guys who have his kind of skill just get a big head over it.
Yeah.
But he definitely doesn't seem like that kind of dude, which is going to really, really help him in the long run when it comes to getting to the league.
Yeah, because, I mean, I even think about other guys who have come from the Valley that went to their had league aspirations. You look at Mike Dom from SDSU, mm-hmm. the Dominator, one of the best basketball players I've ever seen with my two eyes. And I don't know if he went G League or had some opportunities. I look at Rocky, who was one of the better basketball players I've ever seen playing professionally in Germany. And it just kind of seems like there's more buzz for Grant than there has been for any of the other guys. Oh, so
definitely.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see where he goes and obviously how tonight ends up. 8 o'clock, that's a late tip for a basketball game. So I'm going to be up late. Jumping into the NFL, Derek Carr is a Saint. The Saints are $49 million over in the cap, just proving that the cap isn't real. I think they found a way. They gave him like $1 million salary every year and a $36 million signing bonus that could be paid over 6 years. So, like, the cap isn't real.
Exactly.
But I think the Saints are going to be kind of dangerous, depending on how the draft goes. The NFC South's wide open. I think everybody stinks. Kind of depends on what the Panthers do. But the Buccaneers are rolling with Kyle Trask. An old defense, like, just the bare bones of what that Super Bowl winning team was. Tom Brady has flirted coming back, and he might be a Dolphin. And it's just like, can you just go away, please? He's like the Hat Man. Like, he just haunts my dreams every night. But
yeah, I think I saw some tweet right before we had to go get the key to come in here. That I don't know if it was real or not, but he tweeted out, like, you think I'm going to come back when I just got my daughter a 2-month-old kitten or something like that?
So, like, weird.
All right. But, I mean, you've done it before. Like,
apparently, he's going to be in the booth for 2024 with Fox Sports. He put that on hold to pursue stand-up comedy, apparently.
Oh, my goodness.
So, like, it's just one of those things that when you're Tom Brady and everybody laughs at your jokes for 15 years, I think everybody, you think you're funny, but I'm sure he'll find that either way. I think Fox is going to be dominating it for a while, having Greg Olson, who's an absolute stud, called the Super Bowl. And then if Brady's good at it, which I imagine he will be, it's going to be – we have some good football coverage coming soon. Now I just need Tony Romo off of my television.
I think Tom Brady might be a little bit like Tony Romo because, I mean, he's always just – he's literally just sitting there trying to call and predict what play is about to happen the entire time.
And Tony had started off so hot. Mm-hmm. Like, he had the first season. I'll give him the first season where he, like, kind of knew what calls were coming. Yeah. He was just out of the NFL, so he knew, like, what checks were and what everybody's playbooks were. And now he just makes weird noises and gets things wrong.
Yeah.
The Aaron Rodgers sweepstakes, I guess you could call it, is certainly interesting. It kind of feels like a breakup is imminent in Green Bay.
I think I saw something that they want him out.
Yeah, it's just like they're finally done dealing with it. Mm-hmm. You pull the plug and you're finally done with it. But he had his darkness retreat.
Yep.
He went for 4 days, finished in 2 days, record time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. I think if I had to guess, he'd be a Jet.
That's exactly what I'm thinking, too.
But it also feels like, is he really going to, like, try to mirror Favre?
Right.
Like, does he want to – is he, like, try to put himself – I think he's above Favre in the echelon of all-time quarterbacks. But I don't know. It's certainly interesting. I don't think I think the Titans are rolling with Tannehill again. By the way, I don't know what that team's going to look like next year.
Exactly. There's – throwing veterans away like it's nothing.
Bud Dupree got cut. Jeffrey Simmons unfollowed him on social media and took all his pictures down. Like
shopping
Derrick Henry. I don't know if the Panthers would be willing to spend, but I think they could be kind of sporty with the right draft. I think the Panthers could be okay. So what does that leave for? I mean, that leaves Oakland or Las Vegas.
Yeah.
He could be a Raider, he could be a Panther, and he could be a Jet, or he could be a Packer. That's kind of what the options are. But I think people are just kind of done dealing with him. Like, he's so, like, do things his own way that he doesn't allow anybody to jump in. And, like,
he's like the exact opposite of what we were bred to hate in the NSU program with DYOS.
Yeah, exactly. That's do your own shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that we could curse. I would
no F words. No, otherwise we're good. Yeah.
Okay.
Frick.
Good to know.
Frick. Freak.
I think I'm kind of with the whole. I mean, I'm guessing the whole league is thinking it. Like, do we really want to take this guy on and have to deal with all his weird mental things? I guess you could call them.
Yeah. I think if the Jets got him, they're a real problem.
Yeah.
But people talk about, like, the New York media and can he handle that? It's like, he doesn't care about any of you. He'll, like, spit in your face and laugh about it. It's Aaron Rodgers. He'll be fine in New York.
Yeah.
Especially if he's there for a couple of years, like, he doesn't care. But, I mean, they have young weapons and a good defense. And
I think if Mekhi Becton, or is it Mekhi Becton?
Yep.
I think if he can come back and actually be healthy, I think that would give him a lot more confidence if he were to be a Jet or to, like, if they showed the offer. Because I think he could be a really good player. But yeah, they have all the weapons that they need.
Yeah. I think it's just, like you said, how much of the headache do you want to deal with with Aaron? Yeah. It just kind of feels, it has that aura about it that the Packers are done dealing with it. Mm-hmm. They just want to cut ties. Move on to Jordan Love, draft whoever, and see what the next options are. Yeah, but
that would be very interesting.
Yeah,
how their draft is going to go if they're actually going to try and stick with him.
Yeah, because I mean, I would imagine unless like something ungodly happens and Stroud is at like 15, then you have to take him.
Exactly,
he won't be there. Whatever, no. But I mean, I could see him taking like Aiden O'Connell late from Purdue. That quarterback, just kind of take a flyer on a late round guy, mid round guy, see what you can get. I've seen Hendon Hooker. I don't think that's a bad fit. Just kind of sit and learn under those guys. But I don't know. I don't know what Carson Wentz is doing. Geno Smith just got paid. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of stuff to be straightened out in the next few days.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson. Today was the last day they could figure out a deal or put a tag on him. I am not updated as to what has happened.
I thought I saw something about they're putting the tag on him. They just don't know if it's going to be restricted or unrestricted.
Sure.
So I don't know how that's working out.
Yeah, but this is all in context of the report cards that came out from the NFLPA, mm-hmm. which is very, very interesting. And I think it's going to drive these owners to like actually fix things because our guy Cordell plays for Cincinnati, obviously, and they ranked like dead last in food and facilities. They were a couple of years ago, when they had to practice inside, they went to a local college. And then apparently on off days, they shut the kitchen down. You can't get anything. Like if you went and worked out, you can't get a banana. So I think it's good. It's really good. It holds these guys accountable.
Yeah. I can't believe that it's like, are they just now doing it?
Like, yeah. Yeah. This is the first year. So
I don't know how they haven't been doing that forever.
It's kind of the unspoken things that guys probably talk about in free agency. And now it's out in the open for everybody. And now I think these owners are finally going to feel a little push to like fix things.
Yeah. I think it'll definitely give the entire organization of whether you had a good or bad grade, just give you some accountability. Like, how can you improve things?
And well, that goes into my next point about the Ravens and why Lamar might want to leave and why he's been so sturdy about, like, not rushing back. They ranked, like, dead last in strength staff because dudes are tearing ACLs and tearing pecs and, like, getting hurt in the weight room. How do you let that happen? If you have a $45 million quarterback, I'm doing whatever he wants to do in the weight room.
Yeah.
I don't know how stuff like that happens or how you have like we obviously worked with Kramer, who's like widely regarded as one of the best strength coaches in the country, and he's a meathead. He has parts of him that are a meathead and that are uncomparable, but he's evolved so much with the science, and he's always kept up with like how to maintain guys throughout the season and keep them strong and how to keep weight up or weight down, like all these things. I don't know how you can have a guy who was a strength coach in the 90s that is just stuck in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I feel like that comes from player feedback, and now we'll see. I just feel like multiple guys came out and were like, I tore my pec because of what we did in the weight room. It's just bananas.
Yeah, I don't know how, as a strength coach, you can let that keep happening. Like, you obviously have to change something at some point, or the owners have to get them out of there and get somebody who's actually going to help them stay healthy during the season.
Yeah. There was, it almost seemed, there were some combine freaks. We watched the O-line group go. Cody tested really well. He was the main guy we were watching, obviously, but his name's escaping me. The BYU tackle was a freak show.
Yep.
Blake Freeland or something like that.
Freeland, yep.
37-inch right. vertical, sub 5 second 40. It looked like a freak show moving around at 6'7". I believe it was Voorhees from USC, tore his ACL during field drills, wore his brace, and did 38 reps on the bench.
I hate to – you hate to see any injury, especially at the combine, but – for you to tear your ACL at the combine, like where you're going to get a big, and he was a,
he's a top 100 player.
Exactly. Yeah. But you got to have some balls to get on a bench with a torn ACL and no lower body help and just rep out 38 reps.
Yeah. I mean, bench is overrated. We talked about it in this fiasco that it took to get here to record this, but, it's just they look for the outliers. Like I said, if you they're talking to Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus, the Bears head coach and GM, on Pardon My Take, and he's like, "What do you look for in bench?" And he's like, "The outliers. If you hit 14, we're not talking to you. If you hit 47, we're probably going to talk to you."
Right.
It's not an accurate measurement of upper body strength. It's just I think it does show a little bit of a commitment to the weight room, and obviously you have to work hard to be able to put up those kind of numbers. So. It speaks to, like, the intangible part of it, but, I mean, to have no leg drive and go hit 38 is bananas. Like, you're off balance. His leg was straight, and his other one was on the bench. But the other freak is the Georgia D-end. Is it Nolan Smith?
Yep, Nolan Smith.
Ran a 4.39 at 240 pounds.
And he looked mad after he ran it. Like, he slammed his phone down on the ground. Like, do you know how much money you just made off of just that 40?
Yeah, and I think the craziest part is there's been some speculation or like the accuracy of 40 times coming out of the combine.
With all the like screen recordings and the slow-mos of.
Yeah, the one we watch on the TV is not accurate. But like the one that was apparently the ones that are reported aren't accurate either. But we like there just needs to be somewhat of a check on what people know as speed. Like if you run a 4.2, you are the pot. Top 0.0001% of humans to ever live. If you run a 4.4, you're a top 2% human to ever live, like as far as guys in the NFL. So I'm obviously referencing the Jalen Hyatt tweet.
Yep.
Ran a 4.4 and said, guy said the 4.4 didn't help him. It's like he's going to run by every human in the NFL at 4.4. I know last year Christian had his eyes set on breaking the combine record, and he said he was breaking it in training. So I think he ran a 4.3, and he said he was at least a tenth off. But
yeah, I think just since I'm in training right now, I think like my trainers, they stop the watch when as soon as your first foot passes the line.
Yeah,
I think maybe the NFL is doing it till your whole body is crossed the line.
Like a chest crosses or something.
Right. Because, like, I've seen some tweets about guys were testing at, like, a 4.1.
Yeah.
And, like, those guys who have been training guys for years and years, like, they have good, their thumbs are pretty good when it comes to those stopwatches. So,
yeah.
Like, I don't really know how exactly it works, but some guys are definitely faster than the times that they've gotten put up.
Yeah. In the NFL. If you run a 4.39, you're going to get paid regardless. So, Zach Kuntz, the Old Dominion tight end, had a perfect 10 RAS score. I think he ran a 4.57. He's like 6.7 or 6.6 at 250 pounds. Had like a 40, maybe high 30s vertical. And it's just like, okay, yeah, you're gonna be in the league, gonna get paid. And then the big one is Anthony Richardson.
Absolutely insane.
Crushed. Like every quarterback record for every, was it a 41-inch vertical?
Something like that, yeah.
Did a backflip on the field.
Was it like a 4.44?
Yeah, 40? And a 4.440. And it's just like, okay, well, we'll find a spot for you on the team.
I think just, he literally tested in the field drills, I think he definitely got himself into a higher pick than people are projecting.
I think so too. But the ceiling is so high, you just don't know how low the floor is mm-hmm. with him. Because, I mean, I watched a couple of Florida games, and there are some stinky, stinky games. But it is what it is. Somebody's going to take a shot on him, and you just hope that you have the coaching to fix him.
Right.
I wouldn't be mad at him going to, like, Seattle and sitting behind Geno for mm-hmm. a year or two and then letting him cut loose, learning the ropes, learning how to play quarterback in the NFL, and then going from there. But I don't know. I think Will Levis stinks. I think Stetson Bennett is going to be better than people think he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's just old. And I think I'm highest on C.J. Stroud. But, yeah,
he's definitely my favorite. Like, what he did in that Ohio State-Georgia game was absolutely insane.
He's a dog. And, like, not a dog and, like, he's just good. He has some grit to him. Like, he's a dog.
100%.
But when you turn on the tape and just go off of that, Bryce Young's the best player in the draft, I think.
People can dog him about his height all they want.
Yeah.
But he had one bad pass down in mm-hmm. it was either last season or his entire career.
He's starting. In the SEC, dog. It's not like if Bryce Young played in the MAC and was his size and had these numbers, I'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to have to see it first.
Right.
Played in the SEC. I think he proved all he could. Played at a Heisman candidate level, at a Heisman mm-hmm. winner level. 5'10", 206 doesn't concern me that much. No. I thought he was going to be smaller than that, and I think he's fine with that. So we'll see. It's certainly going to be interesting, especially, one, how the draft shakes out, and two, how these guys turn out.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of everything I can think of off the top of my head as far as current events in sports and things like that. So we'll just dive into interrogating you.
Yes.
Let's just start with your background first, high school, hometown, and then I have some questions off of that. So
I'm from Osseo, Minnesota, even though I'm listed as from Maple Grove. I literally live on the border.
Yeah.
Grew up in a 5-member household, mom, dad, older brother, younger sister, countless number of dogs.
Yeah.
Funny joke from our freshman year in our summer meetings. We'll keep that to ourselves, though. I don't want to be dumb on this podcast.
Get canceled. So, obviously, I obviously am familiar with your family,
mm-hmm.
Getting to know everybody through the 4 or 5 years that we've known each other. So, I'll get into that later, but want to go into next your recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
One at Osseo, you want to stay title playing tight end, playing with tackle. Otherwise,
yep.
Yeah, so I mean, made the Minnesota All-Star game, like
played center in that game.
Heck yeah,
absolutely horrible.
some funny pictures came out of that game too. Ugh. So, let's get into recruitment. Where did you all have offers from coming out of?
Yeah, so my first offer was from Wyoming. So we're pretty familiar with that staff when it was. I mean, still Bull, but Viggs was there. Fuchs was there.
Yep.
And then kind of took a while to get my next one. I'm pretty sure NDSU was my second offer. And it kind of just went on from there. I got most of the Missouri Valley. My other FBS ones were Georgia State and Eastern Michigan.
Yeah.
I went to, Iowa and Iowa State and camped there and U of M and destroyed all their commits that they had there.
Yeah.
But they told me that, I think the U of M told me that online coach at the time told me that I was too heavy
mm-hmm.
and I was 350 at the time. And I came here at 370. And obviously we can see how that whole career turned out.
Who was in our class? Was that Blaze that went to the U of M?
Oh, yep.
Blaze, who did they Blaze have anybody injuries. Else from Minnesota?
They had Eric Rausmiller. I don't know how to say his last name. Sorry. I know you're not listening to this, but
he is now. I send it to him.
He was a really, really good center in high school. But I think he went to the U either on a PWO or 50% or something like that. And sure. He ended up being a thrower.
Okay. It's just wild to me how bad, through coaching staffs, like year after year after year, the U of M has fumbled the bag in Minnesota recruiting. I think they certainly could have been helped by having guys like you and Noah Gindorf and Trey Lance on their team. But yeah, that's why they're the U, and we're in the SU. Mm-hmm. So, did you have – I know before you committed at camp,
yep,
before our senior year, we were there together. Did you have any places that you were going to go other than NDSU? Did that kind of solidify? Like, what were your thoughts going through the recruiting process?
I know at one point, like, I was kind of, like, feeling some kind of pressure in my dumb high school mind. NDSU was definitely always the top when it came to – when it came down to who I was going to choose.
Mm-hmm.
Funny enough, the day before I committed, I was at South Dakota State's team camp with my high school team.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the Jason Eck treatment there.
Our boy.
Yeah.
I know he's listening.
Yeah. When I got to NSU, I did a day of the camp just because I was at the SDSU camp and I was injured, and I literally remember me and Luke Chul.
Yeah.
We walked out of the tunnel that we would walk out of during games, and I just remember looking up at the lights and, like, I really, really want to play football here.
Yeah.
So at that moment, I called my mom, called my dad. I was like, yeah, I'm committing right now. So you might see some stuff on Twitter or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I don't think there was ever really a second choice in that situation.
I know, I remember, like, you and I pushing heavy to get you too. They obviously recruit the Twin Cities hard. So obviously you were a big win in the recruiting class. Where did you know as soon as you talked to them you weren't going to go? Are there any, like, funny stories?
Georgia State.
Yeah.
I was at lunch, during school, and my head coach came down and got me in the lunchroom and told me to go to the AD's office to talk to a coach.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I walked in, he said, "Holy shit, you're huge. You're offered." Didn't know me at all.
Yeah.
And just offered me. I'm like, "Well, thanks."
Yeah.
Never talked to them after that. They didn't.
That's so funny.
Text me, call me. Like, they just offered me.
I think that's the crazy part that people don't realize, that that's how FPS schools operate.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as they get a commitment, it could be 2 weeks after they offered you, they'll pull your offer.
Right.
It's crazy. You see less of that in the FCS, but there's certainly a little bit of that. I know, yeah. Iowa State, our senior year, had put out that they could record 543 offers. Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, what does that say about your program that you're hitting on that low of a percentage and then pulling them, you know? But, you know, it certainly says something. It's like in anything. If you're going on a sales trip, if you're a car salesman and somebody comes on the lot and you're like, "Please buy this. I need to keep my family alive." Mm-hmm. Then, like, you're not buying from them, right?
Right.
You just kind of smell that. You wade through the BS as soon as, like, my version of that was USD. Got an NDSU offer next day. USD OC calls me and he's like, "Hey, we were going to offer you. We met as a staff and watched your film." I'm like, "I've never talked to you people."
Right.
But you bet I tweeted out that I got an offer from exactly. USD. You know, it's just, it was, I think people always, like, make fun of the guys tweeting out offers and stuff, but it really was leverage to, like, get offers from other places.
If all the other schools that offered me after NDSU offered me, I would not have gotten those offers.
Yeah. Because, like, I know SDSU offered me first, went to UND camp. They offered me. And then NDSU, I started getting calls from the staffs mm-hmm. more and, like, "Hey, what'd they offer you? Hey, what's going on?" And then I got offered at camp. And I think it's not like forcing their hand, but it's using leverage that, you know, they would normally stack the deck against you with.
Right.
And I think that's why guys do it. But then you see guys like, and I'm not dogging anybody, but like Jackson Howard, who has an offer from every mm-hmm. team in the country. And I think it's just kind of cool for guys to, it's recognition for the work that you put in, the yeah. talent you have. So I think you're a weirdo if you hate on guys tweeting out offers, but it is what it is.
Very weirdo activity.
Yeah.
Don't understand it.
Let's get into the tribulations of your first year at NDSU.
Oh, boy.
Summer workouts. You were in the process of losing upwards of 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. It obviously didn't come off in the 3 months, but you made a big chunk. We were obviously in the same class. We were both learning how to do it, and I was tagged with you. I was just as in trouble as you were if yep. anything happened. So, I mean, can you just kind of talk about, like, those first 2 months on campus, what that was like for you?
Dude, it sucked.
Yeah.
Carrying all that weight around, like, the lifting didn't take as much to get used to.
Yeah.
Just because I was a power lifter and I had all that body weight, so I could move the weight. But when it came to the running, like, I always go back to, it was either a 2 or 3 pattern day, and we were on the literal last rep, and we had to redo it 3 times because yeah. I couldn't get down in my stance.
Yeah.
Because I was just dead.
And I remember, and it probably, I know it forged you and, like, obviously made you stronger, but, like, you look over and Jack Albrecht is in our line, and I think Zeej might have been in yep. our line. Like, guys that were just screaming at you because, I mean, that's how it is. You learn that, you know, in a way you're letting guys down. But what I really respected, like, Kramer gave you options out to, like, help. You were 370 pounds. Like, yeah. you weren't going to be able to do it at full capacity, but you didn't take the easy way out. You did it as much as you could, as humanly possible.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, I, like, remind guys of this, but our first year was after they lost to JMU in the semis. Yeah. There was a little bit more hunger than there ever yeah. was. And it was the hottest summer I ever had at NDSU. Mm-hmm. It was 97 degrees. Every day we ran patterns.
So bad.
No cloud coverage. And it was on the new turf over mm-hmm. at Gate City. So it was just, it was like 110 degrees on the turf. But I remember just, like, seeing you at the dining center getting salads and all this stuff. And I
wish I still did that.
Yeah. No, you're fine where you are now. No, I just, I can't even begin to think it going through. It was hard at 300 pounds where I was at, and you're carrying an extra 70 pounds with you. But I think it was more the mental stuff that kind of got you more. I think the weight obviously would have came eventually. Right. It would have came off, but it set you up for success moving forward. And then we go into fall camp. You're what, maybe 350, 340?
I think I got down to 340. In fall camp.
And we're fighting for our lives. There's like 11 guys.
Yeah.
We had, I think, one guy to rotate the interior three on the twos field with the young guys, and everybody else took every rep.
Yeah, I think so.
There was probably 12 or 13. All the old guys got those guys. Whatever. Right. Is what it is. But I just can't even, like I said, the first 6 months of college football are the hardest anyway. And then having to do it where you're losing 50 pounds is bananas. So,
yeah, like, going back to, like, the summer, like, just trying to lose the weight and with stuff happening back home, like, it took an insane mental toll on me.
Yeah.
And, you know, you knew me, like, I think I said 3 words to you on our official visits. Yeah. You knew what kind of guy that I was. Like, yeah. I wasn't a guy to go and try to console and
right.
anybody, especially a guy like Austin Kuhner or something like that.
Right.
But you can ask, like, probably any guy at that point in time, they definitely did not think that I would be getting to this point that I am right now.
Yeah, or even making it out of the first year.
Yeah.
For how tough it was on you, and that obviously speaks to, when I do think of you, I think of one word, and it's resilience. It's beyond the point of grit. Grit is toughness and getting through. Resiliency is like dealing with all the shit you've had to deal with in your life and still being where you are and walking around with a smile on your face. I don't know how you do it. let's dive into your childhood. Growing up without much. You didn't have a lot growing up. Five people in your household. Yep. It spreads pretty thin going through. And you fight your way through and get a Division I scholarship. That's one less thing your family has to worry about. Yep. And then you go through to, you know, through that first year, and you're like, yeah, I made it, but did I? You know? And then you carry all that pressure of all the stuff going on back home. Your dad's sick. Your family has issues, you know? And still just, like, keeping your nose to it and knowing, like, this is my way out. You had the chance. There's things that you and I have talked about that nobody else will ever know. People don't need to know. Yep. But it's just, like, I give you all my respect in the world, man. Like, it's where you are now and where you're headed, no matter what you do going into the rest of your life, man. Like, you should be extremely, extremely proud of where you're at now. You know, and then I go down the list. I wanted to talk about your resiliency and how you fought through these things. You struggle with the weight. I know it was, and weight was something I've dealt with. I talked about it on here before, but I didn't lose 50 pounds and have to keep it off my whole career. Like, that takes a mental toll. And, you know, you can't exactly live the glamorous life of Cody Mauch eating 6 plates a trip, and it's hard to, like, fuel your body. That takes a mental toughness. And then we go through COVID. We fight through all this. Worst year of my life as I'm a college athlete. You take your 6th year, and you lose your dad before the season. Just, like, that's what I mean. It's beyond something that somebody can comprehend, just over and over fighting through the hardest parts of anything that you went through is the hardest part of someone's life, and you went through all of it in your life. And that's how I know, and you should know, that you are destined for something bigger than yourself, and because you're here. You're here now. A lot of people would have given up a long time ago. So just wanted to take this public forum to gas you up and, you know, just kind of lay out for people that, you know, they see a guy who's an all-time meat grinder, glass eater at NDSU, started and played in 70-plus career games, that it wasn't all sunshines and rainbows to get there. Wanted to tell your story a little bit and let you add anything if you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean,
It's almost like, what the hell? It's like we get past one thing and then it was another.
Yeah. You know, I definitely, like, even starting with our first fall camp, I'll just say it on the pod, like, I almost quit football.
Yeah.
I literally was on the way back to Fargo one time. I think it was the drive back right before fall camp, and I was texting everybody in my contacts, like, would you still think that, would I be Nash Jensen if I quit football right now?
Yeah.
And luckily, everybody that I texted said that you need to stay up in Fargo and achieve your dreams.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing something that, what was this, like, this ticket, was it like 1% or something?
1% of high school athletes play D1 football.
And I think it definitely came down to a talk that I had with my dad. He knew what I wanted to do in life and what I had to do to get there. And he knew that NSU was the place that I had to be at in order to do that.
Yeah.
So, like, even back then, like, there wasn't a transfer portal. I mean, you could transfer, like, but it was nothing like it was now. But I just can't thank everybody, especially you and Katie and my family and anybody who is part of my process. Somebody has done something to help me get to the point that I'm at right now.
Yeah.
Obviously, I did not do it alone. Couldn't have done it alone.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody who's listening and was part of my process, especially you, just want to say thank you to everybody.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, you know, this is what I didn't want it to, you know, like come in here and have it be emotional, but I wanted you to kind of humanize yourself to a fan base that might have, you're kind of closed off. You know, yeah. People knew obviously of the struggles, but nobody knew how bad it got. And that's kind of why I wanted to have you in here and talk about it. And obviously it takes a village for all of us to get anywhere in life, but you just need to understand that it's incredibly impressive to be where you are right now with the circumstances you were dealt. So that dives into more gassing up. I mean, you had like a career for the record books, man. Going on 70 straight games appeared in. I told you should have set out a couple, so you finished at 69.
Yep.
But, you know, had to go and be Iron Man over there or whatever.
Should have just done it.
Yeah.
Just for the narrative.
Yeah. Nice. FCS sophomore All-American, part of some of the best O-lines ever assembled at NDSU. Yep. And some of the best offenses as far as running statistics and things that you guys put on the board, man. It was fun to be a part of. Even in my, I'll call it an advisory role, I got to watch everything happen. But, like, you got to have a lot of fun playing football.
Oh, yeah.
And you're very good while you did it. You're in your process to go to the NFL now. And that's, I think that's more impressive, too, is that you're going on 70-plus games. You put all this film on tape, and you've only gotten better year to year to year. You're healthy. How are you, has it come up in talks with teams that, like, you know, you're 23, 24, played in 5,000 snaps? Like, how are you, one, fighting through it to stay healthy, and two, like, kind of putting those concerns to bed?
Yeah, a lot. I think almost every team asked me about, you know, like, injury history or just talking about how I played in 70 college football games. And obviously I gave credit to Kramer and Bobby and Mason. I definitely wouldn't have been able to do it without the Kramer program and the help that we had with Bobby and Mace. But I don't know, like, it was, like, I'll always say that Cordell is the absolute best leader to ever come through NDSU. Mm-hmm. And the mentality that he helped me develop when it came to having little nicks here and nicks there.
Yeah.
It definitely really helped a lot, just to go out and no matter how your body's feeling, just have as much fun as you possibly can.
I think that was most fun to see, is I see you and Cody acting like idiots, flapping your wings against UND and, you know, hitting first down signs and dogging people and eat pellets and, like, all this stuff that, like, we talked about and had fun with in the O-line room. You guys got to, like, you were so dominant at a level that you could just have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very, very few people, like, have felt that at any level. If you feel it in high school, you know what that feeling is, where you are just, you're a head and shoulders above everybody.
Yeah.
And you get to have fun playing football. And that's where, that's when the game is, like, that's what makes you fall in love with it. But, I mean, and you talk about Cordell, and his concern was that guy played 6 years of football. He's old. Look how it turned out. Didn't miss a snap this year.
Yep.
I think durability should be a concern if a guy has durability issues. And that's been evident by many guys throughout the year. Right. And if you're an old lineman and take care of your body, you can play till you're 35. Mm-hmm. So if they get out of that, out of a guy who's late round pick UDFA, then shoot, what an investment.
Right.
It's going to be very, very exciting for you in the next few months into the next year. But want to just hit you with some rapid fire here.
Okay.
I'm picking my sister up at 3:30. It's 3:15, so we'll see if we can get this done.
Oh, boy.
Rapid fire, you ready?
Yep.
Favorite teammate you played with? Don't try to suck up because I'm hosting.
Cody.
Okay. I mean, he's everybody's favorite teammate. Favorite attribute about yourself as a player?
My pass protection.
Yeah.
Absolute clamps.
Dude, lockdown. That's what it's always fun to watch, just even when you were when we were young in one-on-ones, just you have long arms, your ability to separate and move your feet at 330 pounds, I think, is pretty rare. So it's on film, and now you get to show it at Pro Day coming up here in a few weeks. Dream job outside of playing ball?
It's definitely would be being a teacher and a coach.
Yeah.
That's what I majored in, physical and health education. Just brings me a kind of joy that football does when I see that spark light up in a kid's head.
Yeah. Yeah, you're a better man than me because I can't deal with those snot-nosed little brats. Dream vacation spot. Are you a mountain guy or are you a beach guy?
Ooh, definitely a beach guy now.
Sure.
Just because of Katie.
You were in Florida, too, for training.
I was in Florida. Oh, boy. I've always said that I've always wanted to visit Greece.
Sure. That'd be sweet.
Literally because of the Mamma Mia movie.
Big ABBA guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny.
It was a great movie.
It was a great movie. Let's see here. I won't ask this one. Why? Best movie theater snack?
Just popcorn.
Okay. Straight popcorn.
Or no, cookie dough bites.
Yeah.
Always get always. That.
And they're like $8, and I don't care.
Yeah.
Trash talk your least favorite Minnesota high school team. Call people out specifically. Just kidding. You don't have to do that.
Maple Grove, you're a bunch of freaking cake eaters. You're lucky to even have a single state championship.
You're from Maple Grove. Year.
Don't say that. I wore the orange and black for a reason.
All right. I was hoping you'd go like a Dyna or EP or something.
Oh, I was going to go EP, but I just remembered my hatred for Maple Grove at the last second.
It's even more.
Yeah.
Early prediction for next year's Super Bowl. Who do you think wins it?
I think the Eagles are going to get over whatever small hump that they had this past year.
I like it. That's the end of rapid fire. Stardom, sit-em. Something that is near and dear to you.
Oh, yeah.
Less near and dear to me. We talked about it already. Superhero movies. I am not into the lore, and I don't know the background, but I know how uptight people get about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into this. I hope I piss people off. It's always my favorite part of these. So you start it off. We'll go back and forth.
Start with sit 'em.
Stardom.
Stardom.
Yeah.
My number five, Stardom, is Spider-Man No Way Home.
Okay.
It's just... It was every single Spider-Man nerd's childhood dream to see all three of the Spider-Men that we've had be in the same movie, and it finally happened in the best way possible.
And this was Tom Holland, Andrew Garfield, and
Tobey Maguire.
And I was a Tobey Maguire guy.
Yep, I was too.
Till I saw some Tom Holland can act, man. And he looks more like the comic book Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like the preppy high school kid.
Like, I've gotten into this argument with other friends who are really big into Marvel. Like, which Spider-Man's the best Peter Parker? Which one's the best Spider-Man? Which one's the best whatever? And Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man really has grown on me since I've grown up.
Yeah.
Like, I think he is the best Peter Parker, and the suits that he had in those two movies... I'm going to go down a rant. It's the nerd.
I'll start with my number five, The Incredibles.
Yes.
It's an incredible movie, and it's not just nostalgia. I've watched it multiple times every year since I've grown up. Incredible. I wish Incredibles 2 would have went into the underminer, like how number one ended.
He was just in the first 5 minutes of the movie, and it was nothing.
Yeah, that's my number five.
Yeah, that's... I was going to go that route.
And so many, like TikTok sounds, cultural, like, things that are still lasting now. And it's all from Incredibles. It's an incredible movie.
It's an incredible movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to go that route, but I just have to put Marvel and DC movies.
So let me ask this though: I looked up best superhero movies of all time,
mm-hmm.
and I just have to get your opinion on if it counts or not. But like, let's see here. Sorry, I'm going. Good podcasting. They're talking about like Glass, like with
yep.
Like, is that a superhero movie?
I would put that more in maybe sci-fi.
Sure.
Just because I definitely wouldn't put it in the superhero.
Right. That's category. What I thought too. They have like supernatural powers.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that makes them a superhero. There were a couple movies on this Rolling Stones list that I was like, that's a great movie, but I don't know if it counts. So right. I left it off.
Yeah. Okay. My number four is Logan. It's everything that people wanted to see out of Wolverine, because if, like, I'm not a comic book nerd, but mm-hmm. if you read the comics and how gruesome Wolverine is in the comics is exactly what it is in Logan.
Yeah, and that was where he's, like, protecting his daughter, right? And, like, that was that whole storyline. It was, like, an actual gritty Wolverine movie.
Yeah.
It stepped away from the X-Men a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely the send-off that Hugh Jackman needed in the Wolverine
character. He's back now, isn't he? Isn't he doing another one?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought they retconned something to like keep him alive again. But
I don't know. But
Wolverine was my favorite superhero. Mm-hmm. I think he has steel blades in his hand. Like, he's pretty sick.
Adamantium, by the way.
Oh, sorry. Not steel.
Yeah,
exactly. My number four is Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
I think one is better than two.
Yes.
Two is good.
Two is very good.
Two is great. Three's on the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ryan Reynolds just puts out bangers. He's the perfect actor for Deadpool.
Literally perfect.
Yeah.
Just just how he goes about
his sense of humor.
Yeah. Like, even like in his normal life, like, it's literally like he's just being him, but as Deadpool.
Yeah.
And I love those two movies, and he's absolutely perfect for that role.
Yeah, that's my number four.
I can't wait to see the Disney Marvel version of Deadpool. It's still supposed to be rated R, so I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, they have to go all out with it.
Yeah.
Like, Deadpool, that's the only way it works. Like, you have to see guys get shot in the face, and mm-hmm. like, you have to hear Deadpool say the F word.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how it rolls.
My number three is Avengers Endgame.
Okay.
Anybody who knows the entire MCU timeline knows how significant that movie is.
Yeah.
And the way, I think it was a perfect send-off. If you haven't seen the movie, by the way, just... It's your fault. Yeah, like, if you haven't, I'm not going to give you a spoiler alert. Like, it's your own fault.
Yeah.
But it was a perfect way to send out Iron Man and Captain America.
Yeah, because all the good guys didn't win.
Right.
And I think that is a good mark of a good ending superhero, good ending of a superhero movie.
Yeah.
It had the emotion of, like, they won, but they died. It can't always be the Disney, like, everybody survived.
Yeah, and, like...
Do you want to hear some sicko shit?
Sure.
I watched Endgame without watching any of the other MCU movies. Just went right into it. I'm like, who's that? I was like Googling the whole time, like, who everybody is.
Oh my goodness. Hate you.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. I don't care.
Like, I could get into, I'm just going to try and sum it up. But like, in the first Avengers movie, like, Cap and Tony, like, go at each other. Like, and Cap tells Tony that he'll never step on the line for everybody else. He's just all about himself. Does exactly that in Endgame by snapping. And then Cap just gets what he always wanted, was his life with Peggy.
Yeah.
So it was very good. And I'm glad that...
And that last scene with, like, the assemble is, like, one of the craziest mm-hmm. scenes I've ever seen.
Yeah, I still get chills to this day watching that scene.
It was so sick. I didn't even watch Infinity War. I just watched Endgame.
You suck.
It's still a good movie. Number three for me, this has some nostalgia play into it. I think it's the best one in the series. But I was 10 or 11, however old I was, watching it in the theater. It's Dark Knight.
Yep.
I think it's the best one in the Batmans.
If this movie isn't on everybody's superhero stardom or whatever you want to call them, yeah, you're very dead wrong.
Just, like, the true fear, I don't think there has been, and I'm missing it, but, like, a villain that puts fear in the heart of the watcher like the Joker.
Yeah.
Like, the masks and how unpredictable he was, mm-hmm, and, like, how crazy he was.
Yeah.
And Heath Ledger, obviously, like, will go down as one of the goats for that, mm-hmm, performance. But I don't know. That, like, transcended superhero movies to me. Like, yeah, that was just a great movie.
I think that was a turning point in superhero, yeah, movies. Because I think at that point in time, I don't think there were any, like, really good ones.
Yeah.
Even, like, when it comes to Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man's, like, that just, the Dark Knight took it to a whole different level.
Those are almost less about, like, keeping the Spider-Man storyline alive. This was, like, the first interpretation of, like, now you go into the Joker with Joaquin Phoenix that, mm-hmm, came out a couple years ago. Like, shows that you could play off of, like, the comic book storyline, right, where, like, everything else was page for page from Stan Lee before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Dark Knight's my number two.
Okay.
Deserves to be there. And like you said, Heath Ledger, nobody's ever going to beat that performance, yeah, by him.
No.
I love the Joker Joaquin Phoenix movie, but it's just a different kind of, yeah, Joker from what Heath Ledger is.
Yeah, it's just a different kind of movie. I don't think you can dog it either way. Right. But it's just, I mean, genuinely terrified me, yeah, that I, like, would meet the Joker.
Exactly.
Because of how well Heath Ledger played it.
Yeah.
So that was your number two.
Yep.
My number two, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
Just an incredible soundtrack, mm-hmm, an incredible movie, has the balance of humor and emotion and a little bit of the superhero stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what I look for, is beyond just, like, there's nitty-gritty stuff for the Marvel nerds who, like, want that, like, experience to, like, yep, stick to it. I just want a good movie.
Exactly.
And all the Guardians of the Galaxy movies have been great.
So good.
But the first one was incredible.
Yeah. No, that both 1 and 2 soundtracks are absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And the point that you made about how there's a little bit of humor, a little bit of superhero stuff, mm-hmm, a little bit of gritty stuff, I will get into it later, but Marvel has fallen off the train,
yeah,
with that.
Yeah.
I'll get into that in my sit-em.
Okay. Give me your number one.
My number one is Avengers Infinity War.
Okay. You liked it better than Endgame.
Yes, I did. By a lot, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at that point in time when it came out, it was just getting old to me seeing the superheroes always win.
Sure.
And to finally have a villain like Thanos, like, finally come out of the woodworks. Like, he was always in, like, the credit scenes and stuff like that.
And I think just
absolutely obliterate everybody.
I think Thanos was the smartest thing they could have done.
Mm-hmm.
Because what endears people to a movie is a villain that almost has a little bit of logic, and you kind of, yep, understand what they're fighting for. Mm-hmm. Thanos thought the only way to preserve the world was to kill off 50% of the population.
Yeah.
There was no emotion tied to who he was going to kill. It was just completely random. And he was such an insurmountable force that he didn't look like he could be beat.
No.
And he did. He beat everybody, mm-hmm, in Infinity War. And then just, I remember, like, the hang-up, like, people waiting with bated breath for Endgame to come. And then, obviously, Endgame set every record for box office. Yeah. And now, I don't know if Marvel or how they could ever capture that magic again. They played it perfectly.
Yeah. And I give all the credit to the directors of that movie, the Russo brothers.
Yeah.
There are some things that happened in the comics that I don't think could have been done better in a movie. And that is mainly talking about Thanos' reason for wanting to snap.
Yeah.
So in the comics, he does it purely to win the heart of, I think it's like Lady Death or something in the, sure, comics. So he's just doing it, like, to please her.
That would have been a horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to spin it to where it's, in his mind, it's preserving life. It's was absolutely insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just a masterful way they capped that whole series out.
Another scene in that movie that will always give me goosebumps is when Thor comes into Wakanda after getting Stormbreaker.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, some real nerdy stuff.
Yeah.
My number one, Into the Spider-Verse, Miles Morales. Yep. Mm-hmm. Again, just a banger after banger on the soundtrack.
Can't wait for the second one.
And just, it was something so completely different in the style of it, that cartoon style. And the storyline was incredible, which was different than any other Spider-Man that we've seen previously. It wasn't just like redoing the same thing.
Right.
And now, like, Miles Morales is a cultural phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Into the Spider-Verse is huge. And it was the first, that was really my first introduction back into superhero movies where I sat down and watched it. I'm like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to roll down some honorable mentions here. I have Endgame, honorable mention. Logan was my honorable mention. And then Black Panther obviously has to be up there.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely put, I didn't make an honorable mention, but Into the Spider-Verse definitely has to be on there. It would have definitely made my top five if I didn't think of Logan.
Yeah.
That movie just had a different effect on me, I guess, when you've seen all the X-Men movies like I have and how he was portrayed in those movies.
Yeah.
That would definitely be my number one honorable mention.
All right, let's talk some shit. Oh, boy. I'll start.
Okay.
Number five sit-em is Suicide Squad.
Sucked.
It was bad.
I hated it.
Yeah. It was just like, why are you trying so hard to be edgy?
Right.
And
the only, I'm going to call it a bright spot, is the acting of Margot Robbie and Will Smith in that movie.
Yeah.
It's the only bright spot. I just don't think they went about it the right way.
Yeah.
I think they should have definitely done something before that to kind of introduce all those characters.
Yeah.
But
there was meat on the bone.
Yeah.
And I think Leto just took me out of it a little bit. It's just like trying so hard to be
the dumbest,
the worst version of the Joker. Yeah.
The absolute worst.
Yeah. Okay. That's my number five. That like made you sick.
I know. My number five is Thor: The Dark World. It was so slow. The only purpose of that movie was to introduce another Infinity Stone, the Aether, in my opinion. The villains sucked in that movie. It just pisses me off thinking about that movie. And like, there was no vibrant colors. Like, I understand, like, you're maybe trying to make it a little bit more gritty.
Sure.
But that just wasn't what the MCU needed at that point in time.
Yeah, so they could have done the storyline better in a different way. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. The Thors are the most, like, in-your-face comedy ones. Like, they're some of the funnier.
After Thor the Dark World, yes.
Yeah, because, like, you got Fat Thor. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I just remember all these, like, funny moments coming out.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll get into that in my next one.
Okay. Number four for me, one of the worst movies I've ever seen, not just superhero movies. Edward Norton's Incredible Hulk.
Oh.
It was like the 2006 release. Mm-hmm. It was one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Oh, man.
These were dark times for the Marvel.
I know.
For Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I have very mixed feelings about that movie. I loved how the Hulk looked.
Yeah.
And how the Abomination looked at the end of the movie, but it just didn't hit any kind of nerve with me.
They just made a Hulk movie for the sake of making a Hulk movie, exactly. Not to advance a storyline or anything. So,
and like, they kind of,
you kind of look like Abomination.
We're not going to start a roasting session.
Oh, let's go. Act like you got some in the clip.
Okay. I don't have much else to say about that movie. What are we at? Number four?
Yeah.
Thor: Love and Thunder.
Okay. Just, yeah.
Terrible movie, in my opinion. Not, terrible is a strong word. Not a movie that I was hoping that they were going to make after what kind of push they had from Thor Ragnarok. Thor Ragnarok was one of the best MCU movies that they've ever made.
Yeah.
But they tried to make what I'm going back to what I was talking about with Guardians of the Galaxy, how mm-hmm. MCU is falling off of the train of kind of having a balance with the comedy and everything like that.
Yeah.
There was way too much comedy in this movie.
Right.
From Thor making too many jokes.
They're
from,
feeling themselves.
Yeah. With from it. The screaming goats.
Yeah.
Which I absolutely started dying laughing in the theaters. But as I watched it again, I'm like, what is the point of this?
Yeah.
And like Russell, is it Russell Crowe who played Zeus in that movie? Not Russell Crowe. I might be wrong. I hated that character.
I'll check for you.
Pretty sure it was.
Thor, Love, and Thunder. Right?
Yep.
Yeah, it was Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's
so fat. God, yeah. He looks horrible. Meatball.
Thor, Love, and Thunder is one of the movies I can definitely go down a rabbit hole on. But, like, that movie and the Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness movies, those movies were created with the directors. It's what the directors thought that a perfect movie to them is.
Sure.
So, I can't remember the guy's name who directs the movie for Thor, Love, and Thunder. I know Sam Raimi, the director of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, did Doctor Strange.
Let me look for you.
Thanks.
It was Taika Waititi.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was definitely a movie.
Yeah, and I love Taika Waititi's movies, but just kind of, I don't know if Thor is really in his bag for something like that.
Well, the thing is that he made Thor Ragnarok,
right,
which was incredible.
Just feeling himself a little too much.
Yeah.
He had a heat check with mm-hmm. Love and Thunder.
Yeah.
My number three, I don't know what order to go with these, but Green Lantern.
Thank you.
With Ryan Reynolds.
Thank you. Oh, man.
Was one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
So bad.
And Ryan Reynolds just came out and said, like, I was getting a bag.
Exactly.
That movie sucked.
Yeah.
But it was a tough watch.
The CGI was terrible. Oh. The suit was the brightest green I've ever seen in my life.
And they, like, dipped their toe into what Ryan Reynolds could do with Deadpool. Mm-hmm. Like, they tried it, but didn't go all the way in with it.
Like, how they made him act in that movie is not what he's like in the comics at all.
Such a stinky movie.
So bad. Oh, my God. I should not have taken that off my list. It was on my list, but I took it off because I wanted to take a little bit of a different route for my number three.
Mm-hmm.
Is the 2014 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Oh, you're... yeah.
Like, if you just look up what the movie looks like...
Didn't they try to, like, make them anthropomorphic, like...
They try to make it more human.
Right, yeah.
It's absolutely disgusting. I grew up watching the old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies where they just look like puppets.
Sure.
I friggin' loved those movies.
Yeah.
But
I'm looking at pictures of this movie now. This looks bad.
The only bright spot of that picture is Megan Fox. Sorry, Katie.
Bonk.
Don't listen.
Bonk.
But, yeah, I... Absolutely horrible movies.
Are Transformer movies superhero movies?
Yes.
They are?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They had some stinkers in their series, so I'll leave that alone anyway. My number two, I'm just going to throw the whole series in. I haven't seen a good one that I liked. The Fantastic Four movies.
Thank you.
Oh.
So bad.
So bad. Just the only thing that they had a little bit of heat with was the Silver Surfer.
Mm-hmm.
But other than
exactly
that,
I was gonna say.
There has been nothing good in that movie.
Dude, the most recent one they made was absolutely...
It flopped, didn't it?
Oh, I think it was like 4% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Sheesh.
You might have to fact check me, but absolutely terrible movies and did absolutely nothing. I really hope that Marvel now does something with it, with what I think they're going to be building up to for the next big bad after their current one. Yeah, those were...
Is that on your list?
No.
Okay.
It was going to be until I thought of Thor the Dark World.
Okay, give me your number two.
2017 Justice League movie.
Is that the Snyder Cut?
No, the Snyder Cut is the good one.
Okay.
Even though it's 4 freaking hours long.
Okay.
I will sit through that any day of the week.
Yeah.
But the one that they put out after trashing his Justice League
sure.
was absolutely terrible.
I remember people just bullying people, like executives online, like release the Snyder Cut.
Yeah.
Like that was like trending on Twitter for like.
Yeah. If that's probably one of the best things that Twitter's ever done yeah. is get the Snyder Cut released.
Yeah. Because it was better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
But not like, familiar with those movies.
Yeah. No, if you watch, you don't have to, but if you watch the Justice League and the Snyder Cut, mm-hmm. you could definitely tell the difference, even though the Snyder Cut is 2 hours longer or something like that.
Well, if I want to torture myself this weekend, maybe I'll dive in.
If you got some time.
Yeah. My number one. I don't know how it is. It wouldn't be everybody's number one, but it's so bad it's good. It's Morbius.
It's just bad.
It's another it's Leto. Just another. It's Leto, wasn't it?
Yes.
Just another Leto stinker.
He needs to.
But it was so horrible that they were making money because people knew it was so bad that they went to go see it.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they got in trouble with that movie because they had some kind of cutscene that retconned something that Disney and Marvel did. Because that what is it? That was a Sony Marvel movie.
It's Morbin time.
Ugh, stop that. Don't ever do that again. Please. Yeah. No, that movie was a shit stain on the ground.
It's Morbin time.
Stop it.
What accent do you want it in? It's Morbin time.
It's Morbin time.
I'm morbed up. It was so bad that it prompted another theater release.
Yeah, no, it was definitely just, the second release was 100% just a money grab.
Yeah.
But it worked.
It's Morbin time.
Somehow. That's just
it's the worst movie of all time.
Yeah. That reminds me of one of the TikToks that you sent me one
time. Oh, God, don't even.
Do you remember what I'm thinking about?
No.
We'll talk about it after.
Okay.
I think I can find it. My number one is the 1997 Batman and Robin movie.
Mm.
Have you seen it?
Mm-mm.
Good. Don't.
I'm going to watch it now.
If you just look at pictures of that, like I think there were like five different villains in it. Jeez. I'm glad I don't remember it.
Is that with Danny DeVito as the Penguin? Or is that older?
No, that's older.
Okay.
That was Michael Keaton.
Sure.
Think, Batman. But
I'm looking up pictures of the 97 Batman. This Batman looks like shit.
Yeah.
That looks horrible.
No, there was the Riddler, there was the Joker, there was Bane. Like,
which is crazy because the cast is full of murderers.
Yeah.
It's Arnold Schwarzenegger, George Clooney, Uma Thurman, Alicia Silverstone, and Chris O'Donnell. Like, just murderers.
Like,
and it stinks, huh?
Yeah, I think they were definitely trying to do something to kick up the DC Universe.
Yeah.
And it was the absolute worst decision they could have made.
Okay. What do you think the percentage on Rotten Tomatoes is?
4.
12%.
That high?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. It should be 1. But yeah.
It had Poison Ivy, Mr. Freeze.
Mm-hmm. Who was Arnold Schwarzenegger, which was absolutely terrible.
Oh, a lot of stinky movies there. But I feel like it's never been a better time for superhero movies right now.
Yeah.
It's just how long does this heat check last? You know, how much raw material do they have to work with?
I think... for anybody that's seen Ant-Man, I won't spoil that just because it just came out.
Boo.
But I think it was the right step. It was a step in the right direction for trying to build up the next big bad, who I think is going to be awesome.
Sure.
What's the guy who plays him? He's in the new Creed movie. He's the guy who's...
Morbin makes me feel good. Please. It's Morbin time.
I can see why you need Quinn here to keep you safe.
Because I do stuff like this. Hold on. Let's see.
Don't make it a button.
It's Morbin time. Oh, it didn't work. What's going on? Work. What's going on?
Nothing ever works.
I'm sad. Yeah, this whole studio is.
Ross, this is your fault.
Oh, it's working for you. Talk.
It's morbid time.
No, it didn't work.
Dang it.
This is stupid.
That works.
Yeah, that worked. Small robot. Nope. Whatever.
I think it's not, good that it doesn't work.
Not worth the joke.
You don't need a button like that.
Not worth the joke. Why isn't it working? Whatever. Anyway.
No,
that's me watching Morbius.
That explains that movie. Absolute joke. No, the guy that plays the next big bad is Jonathan Majors.
Oh, he's sick.
Absolutely amazing. And he...
Hottest man alive? He might be.
He might be. But he got, like, trashed on for one of those magazine covers that he did, but mm-hmm. nobody knew the background to the outfit.
Oh.
Because, like, they were labeling him as a crossdresser or something.
Oh, no.
Because he wore, like, jeans that were attached to heels or something.
Oh, people are stupid.
But no, he's... an absolutely insane actor who I think is exactly what Marvel needs.
He's just in Creed, right?
Yeah, Creed 3.
Yeah.
I got.
You think he's going to be a little bit of a resurgence?
Yeah, I think. It's like the whole first four phases, it was just the build up to Thanos.
Sure.
They're definitely not doing what they did then. Yeah. But
that's what I'm more interested in. Like, see what the final piece of it all is.
Yeah.
Like where it goes now.
I just think they need to do better of not speeding up the story that they're trying to tell, but just tell it better.
Right. Make it more interesting in the meantime.
Yeah.
All right. That finishes my very lackluster knowledge of anything to do with superhero movies. Nashy Bear, I appreciate you coming on, man. We've been planning this for a while, and I wanted to do it with you in studio. Yeah.
I was so hyped to do this.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody who's listening understands how ready I was to be in here.
Yeah, no, we're glad to have you. One, because you obviously have a big job interview coming up. But two, you're one of the all-time greats at NDSU. So great to have you in here. I appreciate your time. Sorry for all the issues to get in here. But is what it is. That's a Benchwarmers difference, baby.
Yeah.
Appreciate everybody listening. Go Bison.